Before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know about something that we created called the Secret Strength Weapon. This is a document full of short exercises and workouts that you can add before or after your class WODs to help you get stronger, injury-proof yourself, as well as create structural balance. Some of the exercises include things like tempo work, unilateral exercises, as well as other accessory movements that you might not be used to seeing in your gym on a day-to-day basis. It's a way to add some fun and complexity to what you're doing, as well as help you break through strength plateaus. If you're interested, it's a completely free program, and you can get it by going to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW. So if you're looking to get stronger, if you want to just feel better and you've hit a plateau in your training and you want to add something before or after your class workouts, check it out at brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Kazyu and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Marcus Philly. Marcus is a three-time individual games competitor, three-time teams games competitor. And we both just realized that in 2012, we competed against each other. I was on Hacks Pack. He was on TJ's gym. This whole show revolves around his training program that he calls functional bodybuilding, combining functional fitness and bodybuilding. And we talk about how and if it's possible to look like a Greek god while also performing and feeling tremendously well. We talk about ways to improve your fitness, the way you feel, the way you look, and in general, how to live a fuller and happier life. This one was a pleasure for me. I learned a ton and I know you will too. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Kazyu and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. Marcus, thank you so much for making some time for me today, man.
Michael, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
So as I was preparing for the show, I know that we could go in a million different directions. You're a super, super knowledgeable coach, an elite athlete, and I think that we could spend hours chatting. But since this is we only have an hour, then I want to start out and do this first one with the hottest topic of all, which is the term you have coined, functional bodybuilding, and that is a hot ass name. And by the way, if you search functional bodybuilding on Google, Marcus is the very top result. So tell me the story of how the name was created. And did you do like a little dance when you thought of that or what?
I mean, it was so organic and like accidental in a way that it took until probably months into it where I was like, damn, I think I stumbled on something that was hot and sexy and people are going to connect with. But and then over the months that came following that, people just I started to see all the connections that it opened up. It started really just with a off-season training program that I was following from my coach that was really designed to heal my body after the 2016 competitive fitness season. So I was banged up after 2016 games, followed that immediately with the 2016 grid season for the Phoenix Rise, and the back-to-back intensity kind of months just took a toll. And so my coach and I developed kind of a training plan that was going to get me ideally healthy enough to come back and compete again in 2017. So the movements, we simplified a lot. We went back to just a lot of motor control patterns and getting my loads much, less than I was, used to, slowing things way down, implementing a ton of, slow tempo lifting, doing everything except barbell work pretty much. Mm-hmm. And just the nature of how I was training at the time really was feeling very functional, because it was still, my purpose was still to get back to functional fitness as a sport. But there was like so many bodybuilding principles in there that I had experienced when I was younger that I felt come back, and I was getting a lot of questions and feedback on Instagram and, hey man, your training looks different. How do we do your training? And your training looks awesome. And I think that was just, there was just a day in the gym, and I got to go back and look at the actual date, because there was an Instagram post where I said, man, today, whatever I was doing today just felt like bodybuilding. And right. It was functional. So I'm going to call it functional bodybuilding.
That's awesome, man. I mean, functional fitness and bodybuilding are the two like hottest means of training right now. And you have molded both of them together. So bravo. I love it.
Thanks.
When I was thinking of that, I thought about when we came up with the name Brute Body. We were like throwing around a bunch of names called like Body Transformation Program, the Look Better Naked Program. And then Adi and I were just driving in the car one day. She said, what about Brute Body? And I almost had to pull over. I'm like, fuck, that is it. That is it. So bravo to you, man. I love that. So
same to you guys. I mean, within a name is, potentially there's a lot of things there, but I think the biggest is just an opportunity to like either connect with the wide audience or to kind of close an audience off from what you're interested, what you want to share, what message you have. And I think that there's, functional and bodybuilding are both terms that, like you said, are hot and people are seeking out still. And the people on the one side maybe are a little afraid of the other side and vice versa. And how do we bridge that gap? And so, it was kind of nice. And I'm not the first person to use the term, but like you said, we've kind of got the Google search sort of dialed in right now because people are connecting us and what we're doing to functional bodybuilding.
Right. So over the course of this show, I want two things to happen. First, I want people to undergo kind of a mindset shift in the way that they think about training, as well as have some actionable takeaways that they can go and implement in the gym immediately. Because I know a big part of what you teach, and maybe the biggest, is a shift in mindset from what is typically done today. So let's start here. Why you gave us a little bit of the background about why you started functional bodybuilding, but why is it so important that you are now coaching so many other athletes in functional bodybuilding? Mm-hmm. And what is it that you see is missing in most people's training that makes this so necessary?
Great. Yeah. I mean, in anticipation of probably going this direction in our conversation, I was thinking about this last night and this morning. And I think it starts back with kind of not just the journey that I started in 2016 postseason. It's like when I first started CrossFit was like 2008, and I had trained, as an athlete for years, right? Like, strength and conditioning in college, done a lot of, Poliquin training programs and weight training and lifting. So I had a robust training base going into my first, group WODs or main site workouts that I did. And despite all that background, I still ran into so many issues with injury and with setbacks due to the intensity and then the subsequent volume that came with that in training for CrossFit early on. So I think I was scratching my head back then, like, why am I, why can't I do this thing that I see some other people do? Like, I have trained, but the intensity of functional fitness, high intensity functional fitness, was taking its toll on me. And so that was like one case study, right? Or one example of somebody who had a lot of years of training and was still getting beat up from, the 3 days on, 1 day off routine. And then I got into coaching CrossFit at a CrossFit gym, became a CrossFit affiliate owner. And, I started also to see that happen, of course, in other clients as they had spent years training with us or months training with us, that, a lot of people come into the gym and they want to do high intensity functional fitness because it looks really cool and it has a huge dose response that is attached to it and can really have some profound impact on people's fitness. But the requisite amount of strength, the requisite, motor control, the requisite training base to do it effectively, safely, and for a long period of time takes years to do. And I knew that for myself. So, functional bodybuilding as like a term is really just a way to get back to this notion of you can't run before you walk. And with weight training and strength and conditioning, you know, we're introducing some extreme forms of, you know, quote unquote running with barbell cycling, high rep, you know, high rep bending, you know, intensity that people are just, you know, they've never been exposed to basic weight training and, you know, even just basic bodybuilding. So how can we start to, you know, implement some stability, some basic, you know, motor control training, you know, retooling people on how to move correctly, how to maintain proper positions when they don't have to go fast. Forget going quickly and for time, but, you know, can you do this perfectly without the time pressure under, you know, slower tempos, and then progress them through, you know, some logical steps to get to something a little bit more intense and faster.
So look, you've worked with thousands of men and women of all demographics. What is it that people really want when it comes to fitness? And then in your opinion, how does that relate to what they really need? For instance, I know a lot of shredded and strong individuals that feel like shit, they're bored of training, and in general, they kind of feel like they have shitty lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day. I have somebody who's training here who connects with a lot of, like, you know, power lifters and strongmen, like elite ones. And I was like, man, what's the quality of life like for those guys that are just the strongest people on the planet? Like, yeah, they're beat up, broken down, hurting all the time. And that's true for high level games athletes too. CrossFit games athletes, there's a lot of discomfort and, you know, continual kind of pain and that goes into that. So to your question, I think most people that come in, literally, it's like, I want to look good and I want to, you know, feel good and just be able to move well. You know, my hashtag is look good, move well. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. And so what does it take to get that? Well, in many cases, and in most cases, I would argue that it doesn't require, it definitely doesn't require the training regimen of somebody who's trying to make it to the CrossFit Games. You know, that is above and beyond what somebody who is, you know, let's say a typical client in their early 40s who walks into my gym or contacts for coaching, has a couple kids, works a job, has 3 to 5 hours a week to train. You know, what should that person do to lose some body fat, look the way they want to look, start to feel a little bit more energy? And it's definitely not, you know, the training program I was on leading up to the 2016 games. That's for sure.
Right.
And it starts to look a little bit more like what these functional bodybuilding programs are putting out are. And that's, you know, that's the case for, I mean, I don't know how to put a percentage on it, but the vast majority of people that are looking for fitness.
Right. So how do you overcome so there are so many people, and me included, still to this day at some times, that are so wrapped up in this four-time mentality. Mm-hmm. And while this is one of the fundamental tenets of why the CrossFit methodology is so amazing, I think mm-hmm. a singular focus, and what you're already getting at, a singular focus on this doing things as fast as possible and nothing else can be very detrimental for a lot of people, especially if they haven't learned how to do things correctly before they're adding load and speed. So how do you have that conversation with people to help them really, really understand this and get them motivated to taking a step back and learning how to walk before they run?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's two types of people that we maybe encounter, two scenarios. There's the person that's already in the for time world, let's call it that, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like they do everything in the gym is for time. And you're right, that person's going to require a bit more, I mean, that consultation or that, you know, life coaching process to sort of get at what they really want and what that will look like in fitness is more difficult. And it's much more challenging to say, okay, we need to pull back from this in order to gain over in this department. But I would say that most of those people have experienced, if they're open to changing the way that they want to train or the way that you can coach them, that means that they've already experienced some of the negative consequences of going too fast all the time. Mm-hmm. So they're burnt out. You know, they're kind of actually not feeling as energetic as they used to. They have a great workout. They love their workout, but then they're kind of snoozy and sleepy the rest of the day. Maybe they've started to accumulate some body fat from some hormonal dysregulation that's happening. And as a coach, it's about maybe finding out what, you know, finding what that is that they'll really resonate with. And then right. The education of like, okay, well, we're not going to change it up like 100% overnight necessarily. You know, how can we work back a little bit, pull back in this department, you know, give them a dose in another fashion that keeps them feeling like they're training well. And that, you know, then that comes down to good program design on the, let's say, functional bodybuilding side. It's like, does this program deliver a dose to the client that makes them feel like they worked hard and that they're actually improving, right? Because, you know, the feeling of getting done with a WOD is powerful. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are. Like you're just like, I just did something that had to have helped me. I mean, that really was hard.
Right.
And, you know, so that I think is, I believe that's a pretty important, you know, step to work back with that kind of client who's already been in that world. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, there's somebody that walks in the gym who doesn't know anything about anything yet, you know, and that's the population that, you know, we're starting to work with more and more. Yes, they may have seen some CrossFit on television, or they may have heard some CrossFit or high intensity around, but when they walk in the gym, they really only have goals, and they have, you know, there's an opportunity to develop trust and help paint a picture of what their fitness can look like. Mm-hmm. And for that client, you know, it's about maybe never exposing them to something too fast, too soon, you know, really doing proper assessments and really doing proper education at the beginning so that they don't fall into this trap of feeling like, oh, well, once upon a time you told me if I don't go fast, then I'm not going to get better. Right. Because I made that mistake as a coach early on where that's all I taught people. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a knowledge base to understand like, okay, maybe I need to do this a little bit differently.
Right. Yeah. And I totally agree with what you were saying about that first group in that you have to emotionally engage them before you can teach them a new way. So you have to really figure out what it is, what their pain point is, right? Is it that they're hit a plateau in their body fat, they're trying to get, you know, lose weight and they just don't know why they can't, or they're trying to get PRs in the gym and they don't know why they're putting in all this work and it's just not working, and really get them emotionally engaged before you try to teach them this new concept.
Right. And then also it's like having the tools to know that there's a different way that, you know, way forward for them. Because a common mistake I think a lot of coaches are making is, okay, this person's been here for a while. You know, they're starting to plateau. They're starting to have a little bit of this. Let's give them the more advanced program. Let's give them more volume. Let's make them, you know, let's suggest double days, right? It's it's almost the, you know, it's, you know, that path. It's kind of the wrong, it's the wrong solution. It's the wrong direction. When actually less is probably more for this person. And you have to like step back and be like, what was this person's original goals? Like, why did I suggest doing a double day right now? What do they, you know, what do they want? Which is a whole, you know, another topic of, you know, how people that are participating in fitness in these, you know, gyms and these communities, how they get caught up in the competitive mindset that competition is something to strive for. You should want to compete. You should want to, you know, win. And if you're not racing against the clock and you're not seeing your times get better, your weights go up, then how else do you measure yourself in life?
Right. Yeah, and that's deep. Actually a very interesting tangent to go on. So what do you teach your clients about that?
I mean, it's, you know, there's two ways to think about it, but you know, one of my mentors is, kind of on this, you know, something he's been sharing with me. It's like, you know, fitness is like your breakfast. You don't skip breakfast. You don't skip fitness. So we have to create this understanding with clients, like, and sort of speak this message of like, you do fitness every day and that's just part of your routine, but it's not necessarily your purpose. Like we have to help clients understand their purpose, bigger picture in life. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be career purpose. It could be family purpose. It could be personal fulfillment, soul, you know, spiritual purpose. I just had a consult the other day with a client who has, come in and out of coaching for years. And what I've seen happen and what I basically told him the other day was, you know, I said, client X, you've been in and out of fitness with me and you've started and stopped coaching a number of times. And part of the reason is because you haven't put enough energy into figuring out what is your purpose for your life? Like, how are you going to stay fulfilled for the next 20 years with your career and with your family, et cetera. And in the absence of that, with that void, he's filled it with fitness and made fitness like the thing, like right. That's my purpose. And you know, that has, and even competitors in sports can probably attest to this. It's like that has a lifespan, you know, and it could be a short one or a long one, but at some point, you know, you will not be getting better. Like age will start to catch up with you, or you will come against an injury, or you will come against an obstacle to your physical performance and your growth. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you know, what's there to kind of support the bigger picture of your life, or what else are you working towards? That's kind of like, you know, the consultation and the life coaching that has to happen with our clients individually from the beginning. It's like, okay, so why are you here? You know, and what does it look like outside the gym for you? So why is it important to come to the gym? You know, and okay, you want to lose some weight, but why is that important to you? And then, you know, what gets you excited? You know, like just kind of peeling back some layers. And it's definitely hard, and I'm by no means an expert at that. It's like a lifelong process of learning how to have that conversation, but getting people away from just this one, you know, metric that they can write down on the whiteboard that is right. Their definition and defining, you know, aspect of how they're improving in life. And it's like, well, you know, is the quality of your movement improving? Is your body composition changing? You know, yeah, are your weights getting, are you getting stronger? Are you able to do new things that you haven't done before? The virtuosity of movement, like mm-hmm. starting to really create some excitement around those things again, as opposed to just, you know, I went faster.
Right. Man, this definitely opens up a can of worms. This is one of my favorite topics. So I have a couple thoughts on what you just said, and then we can move mm-hmm. on to what everyone wants to hear about is getting sexier. But
yes.
I'm reading this off of this made me think of this. I'm reading this off of the my chalkboard in my office. So this is a quote by Ryan Holiday. It says, "This is a fundamental irony of most people's lives. They don't quite know what they want to do with their lives, yet they are, very active." So most of us just don't do or take the time to really figure out what we want in life. And sure. So we substitute being busy for being purpose driven. And so I absolutely, what you said so resonates with my experience in my own life, as well as what I see in a lot of people in the fitness community. And also to what you were saying is that so many people are just completely outcome focused, right? I have to do better in the open, or this entire year is a failure. You know, I have to make it to regionals, or I have to beat so-and-so. I have to PR my back squat every time I max out, right? Rather than focusing on the thousands of other things. And one thing that I left out, all of the things I just mentioned are completely outside of their control. Rather than focusing on the yeah. things that are inside of their control, that if accomplished, if achieved, would fulfill them and fill them with confidence and give them a greater sense of well-being in general, which is what they yeah. want. Which is what they want anyway. They just don't quite know how to get it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. There's it's a challenge and maybe an intrinsic problem in our culture. And it's something that is not an easy out for people. It's kind of like that people have to have kind of that awakening or that like aha moment in life to sort of recognize, okay, yeah, I'm chasing, what the hell am I chasing? And some people will never have that, and they'll just keep going and going and going. And, you know, as coaches, or, you know, in the way that I've developed certain training programs, certain group training programs, it's been my mission to sort of make things happen in such a way within in the gym, like when people follow the protocols, like that they have to slow down and they have to do things in a different way that forces them to think differently about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, a big, it's a big inspiration for me is to create, you know, change in the way people look at things with their fitness, which maybe trickles into other parts of their life. And it's part of why, you know, my group program that I offer is called Awaken Training Series. And, you know, it's through fitness that I have learned any of these lessons that we're talking about, or that I've been introduced to them. It's the path of fitness that has opened my eyes to, you know, any of the more deep conversational topics we're hitting. And I want fitness to be a vehicle for other people to do that too.
I love it, man. So going back to the topic of functional bodybuilding, what do you notice in people once they understand and commit to that concept and that style of training?
Well, the feedback is, you know, man, I feel less beat up. Okay. So by slowing down and kind of removing, you know, the total volume of intensity, people just start to freshen up. Their brains start to work better. Their CNS starts to feel fresh. And as a result, they just feel better. Number two, when people start to work on, you know, there's a lot of higher time under tension, weight training principles in the functional bodybuilding, you know, progressions and programs. When people start doing that kind of weight training, I think they start to see an aesthetic benefit to it. You know, it's old school weight training for fat loss as one of the best methods, you know, that was ever developed, right? I mean, bodybuilders use weight training to gain muscle mass, and they use weight training to burn, you know, fat as they get closer to competition. And then I think lastly, I just feel like people are understanding that to get better at the fast lifts or the, some of the performance metrics that they've been tracking for a while, that, you know, to deconstruct those things and to go back to kind of what are the underlying movement patterns that could help you get a better squat. And if they focus on, you know, single leg training for a period of time, they come back to bigger movements, they see improvement in those areas. So I think those are kind of the three big noticings.
One of the things that we notice as well, because our Brute Body program has a lot of similarities to what you're saying.
Yeah.
People are amazed at how much stronger they get without having ever done some of those, as you said, performance metrics that they're so used to tracking, such as snatch, jerk, even muscle ups, right? From doing a lot of tempo pulling and stuff like that. They are just flabbergasted as to how that could happen. They haven't done a muscle up or a snatch in weeks, and yet they hit a PR.
Totally. Yeah. And that's great. And those people are still stuck in this somewhat of a mindset of like, they can only measure their strength based upon a number on the board too, because I know from experience, I'm sure you know this too. It's like you spend time doing, you know, strict controlled work in the pull up or single leg, you know, unilateral exercises. And then you come back to doing your double leg, you know, squats, or you do your kipping dynamic pull-ups, et cetera. you just feel more connected to the movement, which is a form of strength. I mean, that means you have more motor control, you are more resilient, you have better, let's say, we'll call it side to side, or multi-dimensional strength and stability. And that is like a feeling that maybe doesn't get you, more muscle ups unbroken, but it will translate in, let's say, a fatigue-based setting that you might want to perform in. So you're breathing and trying to do muscle ups. And it also allow you to just do potentially more in your training without, breakdown. And there's just for me, and I don't know if other people feel this way, but I believe they do, there's something very satisfying about controlling our bodies, being able to control our bodies and be able to feel how we move through space. And, the days of when I, when I was early on in my CrossFit career, and it was like build up to a heavy clean, and I would just be like terrified because I'm just like, I don't know what's going to happen. Is my knee going to hurt after I'm done with this thing? Like barbells just crashing on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And, now it's like build up to, a heavy clean. It's like, I've done the reps, like I've done this, I put in the time, and that barbell is like a part of me, and I can control my movement. And when I hit the bottom of my squat, I'm confident. And, that is, that's a huge, fulfillment factor for people when they come into the gym and move, because it's just confidence. Like, I can do this stuff.
I love that. I'm sure, Ido Portal, right?
Yeah, definitely.
One thing I heard him say a long time ago is that as humans, we have the innate desire for the development of movement complexity, right? And so we just have this innate desire in us to feel competent in our own bodies. And so everything you're talking about is getting down to the fundamentals of the way that we move. And through that, we become more competent. We know our bodies more. Just as, a lot of us work to know our minds more. So I love all of that.
Yeah. And that's, given the fact that we have a baby right now, it's like, I'm seeing that as her desire for movement complexity and to grow is a survival mechanism. And it's also a thing that affords her freedom and more options. It's like, I can roll onto my stomach. I can roll onto my back. Now I can do a little crawling. Now I can pull myself up to standing on the couch. Now I can get to the next level of the couch. Now I can. So her world is opening up with every new movement that she learns. And in much the same way, when we're in the gym, and that's maybe going back to something we said a long time ago. It's like, that can be a way to talk to clients. It's like, well, the more you master these skills, the more we get to play with all the different stuff, and that was something that a couple months ago I was writing multiple posts about, was that, my dream in learning CrossFit and seeing some of the more developed athletes ahead of me was I want to be able to do it all the movements so well that I could just come into the gym and I just flow. Like, give me 20 minutes of anything and I'm just going to go and I'm going to be fine. Like, I can pistol and snatch and muscle up and do GHD sit-ups and just kind of make it all flow. And that's one of the things that, as a, I've worked hard to make that happen through thoughtful training and progressions and building the foundational strength. And now it's like, yeah, I get to play. So talking to a client, it's like, I want to do that. It's like, okay, it's an 8-year plan. Let's get on it. This is going to be great. Let's do it.
So what makes this unique from what people typically refer to as bodybuilding? Is it just bodybuilding on top of a CrossFit workout? Obviously it's not, but how is it not that?
Yeah, great question. I think it's, with bodybuilding, certainly the, in a traditional sense, the goal is muscle hypertrophy and building an aesthetic. So, one of the knocks on bodybuilders from the functional fitness community is, hey, they don't have great range of motion. They don't, they cheat their reps, they short their reps, yada, yada, yada. Well, whatever they're doing is working because they're all getting, bigger and they know how to put on muscle. But with a big difference here is that we're really, it's the exercise selection. It's what movements are we choosing? And in choosing certain movements and emphasizing, you know, range of motion that we've really learned to appreciate through functional fitness and other teachers that are out there, you know, we're developing, you know, people with really great range of motion and really great function in their joints and healthy and stable joints. It's also the other difference is, you know, in bodybuilding, it's often about creating the most stable surface possible in order to develop force in these rep ranges. So, you know, a seated press makes a lot more sense than a half kneeling press for a bodybuilder, because they're going to be able to lift more weight and get potentially a better stimulus, a hypertrophy stimulus. Whereas in a functional bodybuilding setting, we use instability, unstable surfaces or unstable positions to, you know, put more of a brain demand on the athlete or the client, get them to learn new motor patterns, connect different parts of their body while they're training, as opposed to, like, you know, sit on this bench with this belt that buckles you to the actual bench and then press up on this hinge or this hammer strength machine, mm-hmm. you know, to just really get an isolated contraction of the deltoid and the tricep. It's like, that's great for bodybuilding if that's what you're after. And if you want to do something like that in a functional bodybuilding, you know, realm, let's do a half kneeling, you know, single arm kettlebell press at a tempo, so that now you're connecting, you know, hips, you know, stability, pelvic floor stuff, cross, you know, anti-rotation, and then, you know, all the pressing muscles that you would get from that hammer strength. So that those are some of the, I'd say, key differences.
And this is stuff that's, in general, strength and conditioning is trending towards as a whole, right? Because those are the types of things that are actually going to have an impact, whether it be in a CrossFit competition or on a football field or a basketball court, right? Like, just adding 10 pounds to your bench press or the amount of reps you're able to do on a hammer strength machine is going to have an extremely, extremely low carryover to actual sport, where learning how to control your body, control different implements in a variety of different positions is going to carry over a lot more, because it's going to make you a more durable and dynamic athlete in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the tenets of, you know, CrossFit in the beginning was like, learn as many new sports or movements as you can, you know, become a master or, you know, a master of many things, or what is it, you know, become good at many things, but maybe not a master of any one thing. And, you know, I mean, I was training for the sport of CrossFit for many years, and, you know, things started to seem repetitive. I was like, I'm doing a lot of the same stuff, mm-hmm. you know, to be good at this sport. How can we expand the movement library? How can we get out of some of the most common patterns? Because, like you said, it's like, I mean, at this point, I'm not going to put 50 pounds on my clean before I'm done, you know, training. I've pretty much maxed that out, maybe within 10 to 15 pounds. But I could learn a lot and develop a ton of strength in some other patterns that I haven't even really explored yet, because of maybe limited creativity in the past, or because there wasn't somebody that was showing these movements out there.
Right. And to CrossFit's defense, and I know you're not saying this, but I think some people hearing this might think, you know, there's this big flaw in the CrossFit methodology. I don't think the flaw is in the methodology. I think it's in the practitioners, right? We get used to the movements that we're used to seeing, and we don't do the work to learn new things. The CrossFit methodology is extremely broad and really all encompassing. So this falls right inside the methodology, and what we're talking about is just expanding your repertoire, basically.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. I would echo that 100% and say that, you know, it is that methodology of, you know, constantly varied functional movements that, inspired pretty much everything in my career and training after the, you know, introduction in 2008 that I had. So I see this as part of that same, that same line of thinking. And, the high intensity portion of the, the CrossFit, definition is the one that I think, we want people to be able to produce power and learn how to do things at high intensity. And the path to getting them there is, it might look different for each person. It might not be just doing, thrusters and pull-ups on their first day, or maybe it is. It depends on that person.
Right. With all of that said, I think isolation movements have really been stigmatized in the community. So can you talk about maybe why you think that is, and then if and when isolation movements can be useful?
Yeah, I think the core to extremity concept and how we define a functional movement, or how Coach Glassman defined a functional movement in his, first journal articles, that was the start, talking about how, isolation movements can't produce the same kind of power as other, compound lifts, which is all true. And that over time, became, one is good and one is maybe bad.
Right.
And certainly for somebody who has, potentially a limited, a limited amount of time for their training, and they come into the gym and they only got 30 minutes to do something, and they spend it doing, bicep curls and tricep extensions, perhaps that person's not getting the same kind of global benefit to their, health and fitness, or the same type of dose that they could if they were going to do something with, pull-ups and squats, for example. So those are some of the reasons that I see it kind of it correctly getting sort of polarized. But on the flip side, there's, depending on the person's, amount of time that they have to train and what their goals are, there's plenty of reasons to say, okay, we're going to use, single joint or isolation exercises to support somebody in doing these bigger movements. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that single joint or isolation exercises have a much lower central nervous system demand than a big compound lift. So if somebody's going to come in and do five exercises in a training session with me, and I give them, back squats and pull-ups and deadlifts, and then a clean and then a jerk, if the person doesn't have the, right background in training, or they don't sleep very much, or they have a high stress lifestyle, they might not be able to tolerate doing such, high CNS driven movements or things that require that much brain power. And so to give them a good balance in training, perhaps doing a couple big compound movements up front, followed by some isolation or, accessory movements on the back end, and then some, single joint burnout stuff at the as a finisher. I mean, this is what people can actually handle in their bodies. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't do more than that. Right. So there's the translation of single joint, let's call it a tricep press down, to help develop your pushing in other compound movements. Let's say you want to improve your lockout and your muscle ups. Well, you've got 30 muscle ups in you today because that's all the volume you can handle. But on top of that, why don't you go do 100 tricep press downs in sets of 20, and then use that as a support for what you want to do with your functional movement as muscle up. Or a client that comes in is very deconditioned. They don't have a ton of, energy because they're still on the 6 hour a night sleep pattern that they're working to improve. And we have them do, step ups, and then they're doing some bicep curls with that, because that's what their brain can tolerate.
Right. So let's do one kind of case study. What is one of the most common deficiencies that you see in, CrossFitters, people that come into your gym, et cetera, and what what can they do in a functional bodybuilding sense to start to correct that deficiency?
We wrote about this a little bit in me and my coach, Mike Lee, wrote a course called Functional Bodybuilding 101 with a workbook slash video lessons that we released. And we talked about some of the like common applications and common faults that we see. And the one that really always stands out to me is people's scapular awareness, positioning, and ability to control their shoulder blades. So kind of like the forward rolled shoulders, sort of the, you know, Western society posture. I'm sitting at a desk looking over my computer, hunched a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the functional bodybuilding stuff and some of the things that we're using are great tools to create awareness on how to like basically improve your posture, how to hold your shoulder blades in the right position. You know, getting people to use kettlebells in the front rack, and learning how to hold kettlebells in a correct position in the front rack is huge. And it's something that I use a lot in my training. I post a lot about, and then I see people tag me in their videos of them doing it, and they're holding their shoulders in bad positions. They're just throwing kettlebells on their shoulders, and they're not aware of how they're supposed to pack their shoulder blades down, you know, keep their forearms pressed against their body, keep their elbows pointed down, wrists straight, etc. You know, another thing that we do a lot of is a lot of isometric holds, you know, planks in a lot of different variations. So side bridges, side planks, star planks, you know, front bridges, front planks, ring planks, you know, straight arm and bent arm isometric strength is something that is undervalued, because it's, you can't measure power in that so much. So like a 30-second plank or a 90-second plank or a weighted plank or, you know, even single arm or, you know, double arm farmer's carries and rack carries. These are things that are really great tools to get people to work those muscles and to get good training in without, you know, putting them into, you know, a sketchy position of like, okay, lift this over your head now. And they can't even like support their shoulder in a good position to begin with.
Mm-hmm. What is one thing? I got some rapid fires for you before we kind of wrap it up here. So yeah. What's one thing inside or outside of the gym that you'd recommend people do that can have the greatest effect on their fitness or just life in general? And you don't have to have like the best one, but what's one solid one that they can take away?
I would say investigate your digestive health and I think a lot of people have accepted that poor digestion or inconsistent digestion and inconsistent bowel movements, for, you know, to be more specific, is like normal. And it's really not normal. And your daily bowel movement, you know, is one of the best indicators as to whether your insides and your system is processing things well and working. So it's like having a little, you know, I don't know, this one just the one that came to mind, but I think it's really valuable, and it's something that we talk about with all of our clients when we get started, is to start having a conversation around digestion and then, you know, seeing what inputs in their life, you know, have what impact they have on digestion. So how does food impact that? You know, people are like, I'm bloated. That's not okay. Like, stop accepting that, you know, just every week you get bloated. It's like, no, there's something that's going in, or something that you're doing that's not right. You can actually live a life without that feeling. So, and that improves people's quality of life so fast. People, it's like, oh my God, like no one's out there talking about like, oh, I had this great bowel movement today. I feel amazing.
Right.
You know, but they're definitely thinking it. And like couples, you know, behind closed doors are like, oh babe, I had the best poop this morning. It's like so good. It felt so good. It's like, that is what people talk about. Or at least it's what we talk about in our relationship.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. I yell it across the house. No, that's awesome, man. The gut health education in general is just exploding right now, which I think is amazing. There is this, like, a lot of new research being done on, well, the, for so many years, we've been so focused on, like, the brain being the center of who we are, right? The brain controls everything. And then now we're finding out more and more and more that the gut has just as much, if not more, input and influence over our bodies, our minds, et cetera, right? It affects our overall health, our emotions, everything about us.
Totally. Yeah. I feel really fortunate to have had some earlier coaches, mentors, like 10 years ago, that introduced me to, like, some basics on gut health and started getting me on probiotics way back then. Mm-hmm. And they gave me these probiotics, and I looked up the site that sold it, and it was like something about the gut psychology syndrome, and started doing a little research, and it resonated with me, because I had just spent a year in medical school with, you know, chronic bouts of, like, basically constipation and depression. And, like, mm-hmm. the two were so interlinked. Like, I was just, like, super depressed. My gut and my bowels were totally, like, just not responding in a normal way. And, you know, I was making every attempt to try and change up what I was doing with my food, and just was off, you know. And then come, you know, learn about it over the years, and now it becomes this thing where it's like, you know, it's central to kind of health, happiness, and mental well-being.
Badass. Give us a few of your top resources for people to dive into more education, or just give them a recommendation of what to do for their gut health. Two or three.
The book that The Good Gut is a great book to investigate. I gave that one a read on Audible last year. And to your point, like, this, you know, it's exploding with new research on gut health. And then just, you know, maybe go and hit PubMed and just do a quick, you know, search of some, you know, recent research on probiotics and prebiotics, just to familiarize yourself with the terms and what it means to have, you know, a healthy gut bacteria. And then, yeah, I would say those are probably really two great places to start.
And who are the best practitioners to talk to about this? Who are the best experts to talk to? Is it a traditional doctor of some sort? Is it a functional med doctor? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I would say, functional med, naturopath, you know, somebody who can look at your blood, you know, your blood work, some labs, and because there's a lot of information in there that can point to, you know, digestive health being off, outside of just like, I'm constipated every day. Okay. That's a clear indicator that your gut health is not ideal. But then there's even, other specific markers in blood tests that you can get. I remember having like kind of an aha moment when I had some labs done a while back, and it was like, oh, you know, like melatonin was on my labs. And so the practitioner was walking me through my labs and what they meant. And it's like, yeah, so we test melatonin. So it turns out, you know, melatonin is secreted from your pineal gland, but the bulk of melatonin is actually secreted from gut cells. And if your melatonin levels are off, it's a good indicator that your gut health, you know, that your gut's mm-hmm. damaged, which is a, you know, which... Then over the years, it was like when people talk about their sleep disruptions, like, and they clean up their diet, they start sleeping better. I was like, okay, there's obviously some connections here that, you know, the integrity of your gut lining is going to impact very directly how well you sleep. So I remember that happened about 4 or 5 years ago.
That is awesome. Next, what's the biggest or just a big breakthrough that you've had in your own personal development in the past year?
Yeah, the big breakthrough is, having a child for sure. And then just seeing, learning that, just learning new things about my relationship to my wife through having a child, recognizing that, you know, the patterns that we had in our life before the baby, were disrupted a lot. You know, I mean, trying to raise a child was and is, you know, the biggest disruption to my lifestyle and my entire life. And what that means for the closest relationships to me in my life, how that's, you know, impacted the, my ability to show up and be present, to have enough, really just to have enough energy within myself to show up and be present for others. Right. Which is to me a big breakthrough in thinking, because, you know, people who are like running on low energy in their life due to, you know, poor lifestyle, poor exercise habits, poor nutrition, poor sleep, poor, you know, the variety of things that we see. And then also seeing them struggle in other areas of their life because they're just such low energy, like just how closely related that is, you know, filling ourselves with good energy is so critical to being able to show up for the people that are most important to us in our life. So, you know, people ask me like, well, why didn't you compete this year in CrossFit? And that's a big, you know, that's a deep question that I think when I look back in hindsight, it's like, it was just going to take too much energy from me,
right?
Way too much energy. And I wasn't going to be able to show up for anybody. And it's still a challenge. It's still difficult to manage the different hats that I wear. But man, if I had put in a regionals run and potentially a games run to that, something would have, you know, suffered greatly. And I just don't feel like it was, you know, in anyone's best interest. And for me, certainly, to go that path.
Well, it says a lot about you as a human being that you're able to forgo something like that, that you know that you're so good at, you know, that comes with a lot of accolades and attention and something that, you know, a lot of people just, that's what their entire lives revolve around, and say, I'm not going to do that because that's not on the top of my priority list. I want to be more present with the things that are important to me. That says a lot about you. And that's a great example, for anyone listening, for sure. So I respect the hell out of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that.
My last, question for you, I got from our mutual friend, Mizba. Uh-huh. He said, I have to ask you about your experience in the ashram. Can you talk about that experience a little bit and how that's affected your life?
Yeah. Yeah. When I was basically 21, you know, I was wrapping up college and I was just on a downward spiral mentally. I think I had basically spent the previous 8 years in high school and college just like chasing, like we talked about, just like working hard, chasing good grades and scores on standardized tests, and just like I was relentless. I never let up. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a single anything less than an A, and I had one B plus in college and everything else was an A. Mm-hmm. And I was in a competitive program at UC Berkeley, so it took everything I had to do that. And I wrapped up just like, what the hell was all that for? You know, I had like a my body started to kind of like shut down, like, this is, I'm supposed to go to medical school and I can't do this at all. So my mind was like, I got to go to the other end of the spectrum. It was just how I naturally gravitated. And at the time, my mom was like deep into a spiritual practice with a particular group that was based out of Colorado. And she and I wound up going out there to a little town called Crestone, Colorado. And this place is nuts. It's like, and back then, I mean, this was 10 years ago. I'm not sure what it's like now, but it's kind of this like really powerful, energetic, you know, physical landscape. And I think in this little town where there were, at the time, there were no paved roads, it was all dirt roads. There were something like 200 unique spiritual groups that had all arrived in this one place and had set up, you know, their own little centers, independent of one another. They were just like, they were all drawn to be in this place because it was so powerful energetically. So it just so happens that this spiritual group had an ashram there, and there was like, you know, it was some Hindu practices that they, you know, in Hindu religion that was kind of underlying some of their practices. There was a guru that was kind of the leader of this group that would spend time in the United States at this ashram. And I visited for like a few days with my mom and was just really like, you know, had a powerful connection with like the resident kind of leader director that was there, Swamiji. And so when I got home,
I'm like, that is a rapper's name right there. I love that.
Swamiji. Oh my God. Which is so funny because he's actually originally from like where I live. And this guy is, you know, he's like a monk. Like he's devoted to this lifelong service and, you know, wears white every day and got rid of all his possessions. And it's like, you know, out there in Crestone. And I'm like, man, I just connected with him. So I was like, I got to go back and spend some time. And people were like, they invited me to like be there for, I stayed for a month, which was really transformative for me. But, you know, the daily routines were like wake up at 5 a.m., which was early back then for me. And it was like, mm-hmm. go meditate for an hour in silence, you know. And then it was like have communal breakfast, which all the meals were always in silence. So it was like communal breakfast, eat together, no one talks, mm-hmm. just kind of share space, sitting on the floor. You know, you wear white every day, head to toe, everyone's in white. You know, there were actual days. I think it was Thursday, which is funny because that's like our rest day now. But like Thursday there was like day of silence. Mm-hmm. Like nobody talked from like morning until like, you know, the next day. Like you'd go through the whole day without talking. And then there was even a weekend where I was challenged to go and do a solo, which was like they had like a house there. You go and stay in for like – I stayed for 3 days. So it was just by myself, no talking for 3 days. And that was pretty heavy. But I mean, all of the experiences there, and there were many more, it was all very purposeful. And I was being guided by some good people to just connect with who I am and what my purpose was and kind of strip away what's all the stuff that, you know, I carried with me for all those years as labels, you know, student athlete, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, okay, I'm none of those things. I'm just Marcus, who's here, you know, alone, silent, you know, with my own thoughts. I came back. I remember coming back from that. I actually flew from there, the ashram, to San Diego to interview for UC San Diego Medical School.
Oh, shit.
I know. It was like such a flip, right? I wish I could be the person that interviewed me because I was like so blissed out and like totally in the happiest space of my life. And I'm like probably talking about like feelings and stuff. And they're like, hilarious. So, you know, and they're like, whoa, this kid is out there.
Yeah. You're like, none of this really matters. Yeah. None of this thing even exists.
There you go. That's for sure.
That is awesome.
But it was fun.
That's cool, man. That's such an amazing experience. Yeah. I spent 9 weeks in the desert. I did a wilderness therapy program when I was 17. And I remember driving out of there. I mean, I didn't see a single electronic other than like one of their radio things for one of the staff's radios for 9 weeks. And I remember driving into St. George, Utah, and literally just like overwhelmed by everything that humans have built. You know, it's just like there are so many things that are unnecessary, and all of the stresses that we put on ourselves are completely of our own making. And so I really love that story. And I think, you know, you don't have to do a full month to get tremendous benefit from silence, from meditation, from some soul searching. So I think that's really, really cool, man.
Yeah. It's something that, you know, we sit around, my wife and I, we think about, we're like, gosh,
where's there, you know, the opportunity for things like that in our life, you know, certainly has passed. You know, we're now in a new space with, you know, raising a child, and maybe it'll come later in life, but being really grateful for having taken chances and opportunities like that. You know, we both did a number of things that, you know, separately from one another that we still look back on. We're like, that was good, and something that we want our, you know, our daughter to have too when she's older.
Hell yeah. All right, let's wrap it up, man. So what are you working on currently that you really want people to know about, and where can people learn more about you and everything that you and your team offer?
The place to go is revival-strength.com. That's my coaching business. And coming up on January 1, we are launching our Awaken training series, which is, you know, functional bodybuilding put into practice, a 12-week kind of training program. And it's really been, at this point, I think we've had, you know, close to 1,000 participants in the past year that have joined us. And it's been just a great launching pad to educate people on functional bodybuilding and how they can implement it into their training. And really, it's not something that we are, you know, people can do 12 weeks and then they can move on to other training in their life, and hopefully take some lessons with it, with them. And then additionally, if people are interested in learning more about functional bodybuilding, I mentioned already, but we have, our functional bodybuilding 101 course that I co-wrote with Mike Lee from OPEX Fitness, and it's over, being sold at functionalbodybuilding.net. That is our platform where we have that for sale, so they can go and check that out. It's basically you know, philosophy as well as kind of the origins of functional bodybuilding, and then, you know, fundamental principles and understanding how the training really is built for people that want to, you know, implement it and understand it better for themselves, or if they're coaches and they want to, you know, use some of these principles within their training programs at their gyms, with their groups, or with individuals.
Hell yeah, man. And guys, go follow this dude on social media. It's just full of very high quality videos and images with a ton of good education on every single post. What's your Instagram handle?
Just Marcus Philly. And then we also got functional.bodybuilding, which is just a movement library of all the different movements that we're doing here.
And that's Philly, F-I-L-L-Y, not that's like correct. The cheesesteak, guys.
That's right. That's right.
Marcus, this has been phenomenal, man. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Thanks for having me.